Great. So good morning, everyone. I'm Brendan Sharkey, the chair of the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, and this is the Local Government of the Future subcommittee meeting for Tuesday, August 23rd. Our yet to be formally appointed vice chair, John Filczek, is joining this morning. I don't know, John, if you want to give any greetings or
I'm just glad to see that you found the great Northeast and Dunkin' Donuts down the street.
Dunkin' Donuts at the corner of 44 and 74. Am I right?
And 74.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing like it. It's a very yummy croissant sandwich here.
we have a few other places that might entice your palate a little more.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there are. I was more desperate than anything. as I was coming out of this meeting. So in any case, I think you're all familiar with our Zoom protocols, but except to say that because I'm doing this from my phone, I don't have full view of everyone's screen. So the usual raise hand functions, I think you actually have to use the actual raise hand function if you want to be recognized, so I'll be able to see you. And John, maybe you can help me out a little bit if you're seeing something I'm not, or Bruce. So otherwise, I can only get four screens to the view on my phone. So so help me out with that if you see something I'm not seeing. I don't know if anyone has any comments about last month's meeting notes or meeting minutes from the last ACIR meeting, which Bruce had sent out. Usually we kind of may not have any comment on this until the full meeting. So we can kind of jump right in if that's okay with everybody. Under the LGF subcommittee now, again, just to reiterate to folks, we've got really three different projects that we're working on at member suggestions. One is the federal funds maximization through COGS and RESCs. The second is assessing the reporting requirements to the state. And there's something to report on that, I think, from my side. And then the restructuring of property taxes and how we're going with that. So I kind of wanted to jump right into those topics right away. I know with regard to the federal funds maximization, that has been Francis's baby from the beginning. And thanks to the fact that he's had some intern help over the course of the summer. And I know, Francis, you were thinking about making a presentation to the full ACIR at our next meeting. I don't know if you wanted to give folks a preview of that.
Yeah, I'll be sending out a couple documents soon, the next couple of days. I don't know if it works out for September timing, but we've gone through a draft of our kind of grant structure report, grant office. And then we also have just a couple of slides on other opportunities to remove self-imposed restrictions that limit how much federal funds we can bring in.
Right.
So I'll send those to you, Brendan, first, and then, we can talk about when to get them out.
Great. Okay. I mean, would you want to, how would you want us to take a look at this? Do you want perhaps the subcommittee to take a look at it? It's first before you present to the full ACIR?
Yeah, that's a good idea because we do have the subcommittee structure. So let me get it out of the subcommittee first and then we can decide what to do with it.
Good. Fair enough. That sounds good. Okay. And then the second item was the local reporting requirements. Bruce and I spent a little bit of time after the last ACIR meeting kind of brainstorming a little bit about how we might want to approach this issue. I think there were different variations on what we were considering. One was perhaps, you know, having some kind of a compendium of reporting requirements, which then would be evaluated in some way through a survey or what have you. I think Bruce, kind of correct me if I'm misstating this, but I think we both agreed that that's a bit unwieldy as a task for the ACIR to take on, just based upon the total volume of reporting requirements that are in fact out there. And then trying to figure out which ones and then how to ask people about each one and so on. And I think what we concluded was that maybe we should take on one or two that we could identify ourselves through our own membership that are maybe in some people's minds are questionable in terms of their value. And then if we're in agreement about that one or two study topics that we felt maybe could get another look at, we pick that one, then do the similar kind of a survey to interested stakeholders, similar to what we did with the remote meeting study, and then get some feedback on how people feel about these studies. And then, of course, go to the state agency that is the recipient of that one or two studies to get their reaction and determine if, in fact, they are of value and what they're used for, or if not. And depending upon that two-part feedback, we could then make a recommendation to the legislature in the 2023 session about modifications or even potentially elimination of that reporting requirement going forward.
Brendan, we might want to engage the Assessors Association and the Town Clerks Association, which has, you know, they're doing a lot of reporting and they get the pulse of their membership. And just to get their assistance because, you know, you're in Ashford, that's pretty much a full-time person, but you go north and it's one day a week in Union, and a little further east and you're in Eastford and that's one day a week. And the capacity of these towns varies but they all have the same reporting requirements. And
right.
And often, they're not sure why they're doing it.
Yeah. Well, I think following the meeting that Bruce and I had, just the informal meeting that we had, I did send out an email to CCM and COST, I guess, asking for feedback if they knew from their membership, what's the one or two really obvious examples that you can come up with from your membership that may be either superfluous or that there are serious questions about. I didn't get a response back from folks. And so maybe your suggestion about broadening out the inquiry to a couple of other, that's a great idea. I hadn't thought about the town clerks in particular as a resource for that. And maybe we can do the same thing.
There is Martin's not on the call, but there is a working group that Francis and I and Sam Gold and the several assessors and I think there's town clerks on there too, had that was a group on assessment, but that was some folks, representing those activities within the town hall that they didn't seem too shy to share their views.
That's a great suggestion. Why don't we do that, John? I don't know if we want to.
Brandon,
I mean, yeah.
Oh, sorry. I'm on phone, so I can't actually raise my hand. But
right.
But pardon the interruption. But I was going to add that, you know, I like John's idea, and I think there's also, in looking at these reporting requirements, what I've mentioned in the past is there may be opportunities to do more analysis with the data we gather. So, for instance, the assessors, property tax sales are reported to the state for the purpose of calculating, you know, net equalized grand list, what the drift from the assessments is. But that could also be used to calculate, analyze equity in property taxes. There may be some simple reports that we don't currently collect, like what is the median property tax bill on a normal house in a town, right? We have a very poor understanding statewide of what the property tax burden is, because it varies so much geographically. We know it by, you know, income bins, but there's a big geographic or spatial component we don't understand. And perhaps in some cases, we actually want a little bit more reporting to help us understand reality better and make better policy.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You caught me with my sandwich in my mouth. I think it seems to me that is a valuable addition to the theory that we're operating under. I think, as I said earlier, I think the original intention of this is to try to find out what stuff is superfluous, but that we may want to reconsider. But yeah, if you're kind of taking it to a different level, which is what things should we ask for? So what additional reporting should we suggest that the legislature put on municipalities? So, you know, I'm open to anything. I get where you're going with that.
I think too, it would be good to ask, you know, these folks that are producing these reports, and I've somehow got zeroed in on town clerks and assessors, you know, what would be, what would they think is valuable to report? I mean, we've got some folks out there, you know, we're asking for stuff, but maybe we're not asking the right questions. So there may be something that should be added that's not being asked that would add value statewide. I don't know what it is.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you this, John. Is there, it sounds like this is more of an ad hoc group that you're associated with.
Martin set it up almost 2 years ago to deal with the car tax and certain other, you know, they were kind of working through the legislation. And but that was maybe 8 or 9 of us, Francis, that worked on that.
Yep.
So I'm going with this, I'm wondering if there is a a regularly convened group, or if it's something you just kind of call a meeting. But either way, is there an opportunity maybe to meet with this group to kind of explain what we're looking for and get their input?
I would think so. It's kind of pre-organized that, you know, Martin had him through OPM. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, could I task you with that? Would you mind being tasked with the effort to kind of pull that together?
Sure. I can talk to Martin and see if we can have a joint meeting.
Yeah, that would be helpful. I think what you guys are raising is really interesting. It's a different...
Because, you know, you had in that group, I think it was, you know, somebody from Waterbury, Colchester, the Lower Connecticut River Valley. There was a spectrum of folks there that were... doing stuff, and he had worked in other, maybe and worked in other jurisdictions as well.
Right.
A lot of experience was at the table.
Yeah, that's great. I think, why don't we go ahead and do that? I think it's kind of an awkward question to ask in an email, I guess, to Cost in retrospect, to Cost and CCM. Hey guys, what do your members gripe about the most in terms of reporting? You know, I mean, it's a little bit of a difficult question to answer. And so maybe that more precise approach is makes a lot of sense to me. So why don't we, if you could do that, I think that would be great. Jim, I see your hand is raised.
You're muted.
Yeah, you're muted though.
Good, Jim.
Thank you. A couple of thoughts. First of all, let me get my second thought out of the way first here. And that is, what would anyone think of selecting two or three of the state agencies who receive many of these reports and asking them to suggest what reports may be unneeded? What reports do they just shelve and never look at again? That sort of thing. Perhaps they might suggest some. The other thing that I was thinking is that, Brandon, you started out by saying that perhaps we should look at one or two reports and then make a suggestion to the legislature if appropriate. But then we sort of segued on to back to the original topic, which was more broadly to look at a range of reports to see if there was perhaps a pattern of reporting to the state that could be modified or made more efficient. And so I'm wondering, we seem to be talking about two different things in a certain sense. I would just want to say that in terms of, I think given our capacity, it may be that we need to be very limited in terms of how we begin to approach this. And maybe over time we can expand it once we get a system going, so to speak, get the methodology down. So it might be good to have a leader out there that we focus on and then figure out how that works. But I wouldn't want to lose sight of the fact that if we're looking at one for the next 3 or 4 months, let's say, that there probably are 100 others out there that are just as important that we should be focusing on.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jim. And I don't think I was clear in how I was communicating this. So I apologize. The intention is definitely to do one or two. I think the broader, the idea of doing some kind of whole, range of studies to kind of find, we don't have the capacity to do that. I think Francis and John are talking about a wrinkle to this, which is not just, hey, these reports are stupid, why are we doing it? But perhaps asking as part of that, are there other data that we perhaps should be collecting that we aren't? That's a different wrinkle, but I don't think it, in my view anyway, I don't think we want to start, going into a kind of wholesale expansion of the scale and scope of reports that are required. That keeping it narrowly focused to just those one or two, based upon who we think, what folks are telling us. I was going to also respond to your second point, which was, and it just escaped me.
Had to do with perhaps inquiring from several.
Oh, right. Right, with state agencies. Yeah, so I hear you on that. I guess the problem is that, I mean, there's a lot of state agencies and a lot of reports to a lot of state agencies. I don't know exactly. It's sort of like asking CCM to tell us, you know, what are the reports that your members say are worthless? I don't know quite how to broach that with any one or a number of state agencies. My thought was to come to them based upon the feedback we get from locals who tell us we think these reports are kind of worthless. We assume they're getting put on a shelf. And then once we identify them, then go to the state agency who receive them and say, what about this? Do you actually use this data? Is it a value to you or not? So we were kind of broaching it. We're approaching it from the state agency as a second level investigation once we've identified what the reports are. So I don't.
Yeah, Brenda, yeah. Ms. Francis, again, what I might say is, you know, the example that John brought up of the kind of joint working group of OPM, COGS, tax collectors, and assessors could be a good model, because it was really a conversation from both sides, and you had the state agency there with the local officials where they could each, you know, express what their opinions are about the top matter at large. So that could be a way to do it.
Right. Yeah, I kind of like that. I think that makes a lot of sense. And we are, after all, the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations. So,
if we put your hand up.
Yeah,
I've got Margaret. Yeah, hi, Margaret. Yeah,
I was just going to say that, just being, forgetting about what I may think about mandates and that kind of stuff. The reason why government would ask for reports is that they're responsible because they gave them some money, or they were required to do this, and they need a way of covering themselves, in a sense. Where did the money go? How was it used? That kind of thing. And then there are other mandates that are just, you know, good policy mandates, the quote unquote unfunded mandates of what we tell people to do, whether it's on land use or other things. But if you think about it that way, as they say, follow the money is one way of looking at it. But am I correct? Is that what you would say about mandates generally anyway? That we're talking about the reporting business?
At the risk of, I don't mean to cut anyone else off. I don't think we're looking at this from the perspective of mandates, you know, for mandate's sake. I think what started the whole conversation about this topic was the fact that was the question about what data are we collecting and why? Mm-hmm. And and can we identify some that are not of value anymore? You're right. I think it's a great observation that once upon a time, it may have been valuable and important to collect the data. But it, whatever that original purpose was, has now been, is now obsolete. And maybe we don't need to do it anymore. I mean, that's kind of where I think this all began. Go ahead.
The other piece of this, and the other, you know, we have members of ACIR in education, including the Department of Education. If you go in and look at the data that they collect from school districts, you know, now I'm not in that field, but it's, to me, it's a lot more refined and valuable than what I see on the general government side that the state is collecting. Mm-hmm. And there may be lessons to be learned from that side of the ledger for general government. But again, that's not my my field, but I'd be curious to see, you know, is all that information that they do produce in those reports where they can compare districts and et cetera, do they find that of a value? Because it's much more, at least superficially, impressive than what we get on the other side of the ledger.
Yeah, Margaret, this is Francis. The way I look at it is, if I walk into the pantry in my house, I have all of these strange things I bought for some purpose once upon a time that have piled up, and I have no sugar or butter, right? So I don't have the right things in there. And what can I actually make with what I have? And so I think that's the challenge, is it's just built up over years and years and years, and we've never looked at it strategically, pared back, figured out what we can cook up with what we have. So I think it's just time for a review, basically.
You know, I can tell you, when I was deputy commissioner, for animals to get to the Big E, they have to have a health certificate. And the state vet would sit in we'd have a meeting. I remember this. He had about a 6-inch tall stack, and he was just rapidly signing these things so these birds and cows could get across the state line. There's just no, some of these agencies don't have the capacity, you know, to review and even log these things. You know, I'm sure it's changed in 25 years. I hope it has. But, you know, we take the animal bite reports that we still have to fill out and put them in banker's boxes and pile them up in one room. You know, of what use? No, none, but we had to do it. Well, we have
and the
to
theory, right. And I think the theory is that, you know, we can do this on an ongoing basis within ACIR. You know, we can take on one or two of these every year, you know, or every 6 months or so, and make recommendations to the legislature at the beginning of their session. But do it, as Francis is describing it, you know, one or two at a time, but do it maybe on a rolling, ongoing basis.
And that's where that Title VII study is going to be it may be important in relation to this, because it's going to pick out some of those old cans of vegetables that Francis bought.
Bruce, I got you. I do see people's hand raise on my phone. So,
okay, thank you. I just wanted to add one thing to the mention of starting out by looking at just one or two things, that part of the intention was to kind of pilot test the idea. And so it could be something that it isn't just the ACIR will do one or two of them at a time as quickly as it can do them, but to pilot test the process and maybe outsource it, say, to OFA or OLR or CCM or cost for that matter, but to just, here's this thing that comes up at the ACIR, let the ACIR start working it out, and then hand it off to someone who has capacity.
Thank you, Bruce. Yeah, thanks for adding that, because you're right. That was your idea that we had when we were brainstorming, and it was a brilliant observation, and I forgot to mention that. So you're right. Hopefully that answers your question.
I like that. That works. That works for me better than the conversation we've been having. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's got more of a focus that would eventually lead to some significant, you know, evaluations and changes that, you know, might happen in our lifetime.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Bruce, for that. So I guess if you know, it sounds like that is a good group, John, to run this by. So if you wanted to, you know, talk to Martin and see if we can set that up, I'm happy to participate in that. Whenever you can get that scheduled.
Margaret, you had another comment.
I was just going to say that's the perfect, we were working out a methodology, basically, you know, in this whole, to study the whole thing. And at the same time, we're working on what John was mentioning, you know, check whatever it is, Chapter 7, whatever. And also we're involving others who've worked on it. So I think that that's a very good plan.
Good. Okay. Good. All right. Well, thanks for the contributions on that. And we'll report back at our next ACIR meeting for sure as to where we stand with that. But hopefully we can get a meeting, John, together. If not, not before the next ACIR meeting, but we can, you know, early September would be great. So the third topic that the committee, the subcommittee is taking on is the property tax restructuring, the big Megillah. The update that I have for the meeting this morning is just that I'm currently scheduled to meet with Mark Boughton in person on next Thursday. Next Thursday morning. So I think we're going to be in person. If not, we'll do it by Zoom. But I, you know, we, I want to kind of, I asked for a block of time with him to really hash through what, how to approach this, both using his resources and ours, and how to work together on developing that kind of dynamic, change to our property tax structure. He is all in on it. He's very excited about it, and looking forward to making that happen. Again, this will be a little bit under the radar from a political standpoint while the campaign goes on. But if Mark and I, if ACIR and DRS can be working on it between now and December, under the radar, I think that'll be, you know, hopefully we can get some really good results out of it in time for the session when it starts in January, or at least when the governor presents his budget in February. So that's kind of the status from Reporta from my side. I don't know if anyone has any thoughts about what to bring to that meeting with Mark next week. Is there any, are there any other thoughts on that?
Well,
this is Francis. Oh, sorry, go on, John.
Go ahead, Rick.
Oh, sure? I was just going to say that, you know, I think a really important point here is the overall property tax burden, the trajectory of it going up 40 years straight in basically every town. So I know that's not necessarily always what we're talking about, but I do think we need to understand that the footprint of the tax is getting larger and larger and larger.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that, Brendan, thank you again for your leadership on reaching out to DRS and Mark Boughton. I think we here at CCM think that's a great idea and want to support that effort. As many of us have said in previous discussions, this is a topic that's important to people from all different walks of life in Connecticut. It has been for a really long time. In many reports and many sets of recommendations on how to address this. And what I hope might be added into the mix this time is leadership from the top in the state that could guide us towards meaningful progress. And that's what we hope for in your outreach to DRS and to Mark Boughton. And I think we'd like to support you in that effort along the way. With regard to, you know, an agenda or discussion topics, I know you have talked, Brendan, previously about reviewing some of the many reports that have been done already, and trying to call out or pull out from those reports recommendations that might be attractive to state leaders and also allow for meaningful change. And I think we support that too. We'd want a chance to put our two cents in at some point, but this seems like a good strategy for a way forward.
And I've been working on that report of the reports, And it's still a work in progress, but I'm hoping to have that. I'm hoping to have that done before I meet with Mark next week. Yeah, John.
I would just add, you know, I think as, you know, I've studied this and as a base going forward, that whatever's done, and I'm hoping there's not a focus on let's get a $200 tax credit here or something like that, but true reform. So based on that, if we want to go big, then I think we've got to address the vertical and horizontal equity issues and at the town and the school level, we've got to get what the Federal Reserve folks call the need capacity gap and the cost capacity gap. And there's, you know, without going into all the details, there's ways to fix that. And there was some legislation actually formulated to around the Federal Reserve reports that were done in 2015 that unfortunately didn't go anywhere. But I think that has to be, from my perspective, the base. We're not going to solve it all at once, but if we get us on the right track, then we can make some progress. And it's all in the report that I wrote for 1,000 Friends. That's a bad plug.
Yeah, and John just made a reference to the Boston Fed report from 2015, and some of you may be aware that Ron Thomas continues to work with his contact at the Boston Fed, and there's now a new date set for a meeting where, and I'll first give you the date. It's September 14th at 2:00. It's a virtual meeting, of course, and I assume that the agenda will include reviewing some of their earlier work on this topic, and asking for advice or the type of support that they can provide along the way.
And we do have too that the Connecticut, whatever they're called, School Finance Group.
Yes.
They replicated the study in 2019 or 2020 and basically came to the same conclusions with newer data. So just like, you know, even though the two tax incident studies differ in many ways, they still demonstrate pretty much the same conclusions.
The other thing we could include is the examples of Massachusetts and New York, which have successfully done some property tax reform, particularly with cost containment measures. And we've seen that effective property tax rates have diverged between Connecticut and those two other states since that's happened.
I didn't know that, Francis. Is that true? I hadn't.
Yes, it is true. I mean, Massachusetts is best known for Proposition 2.5 from 1980, right? Which is an actual levy cap. And if you compare what's happened in for similarly valued homes, I mean, there are other factors involved too, but New York's done the same thing and they've also seen a divergence from us.
Interesting. Okay. I wasn't aware of that.
What kind of diversion?
Margaret, essentially, because they've made it not impossible to raise taxes beyond the cap, but they've made it harder. It's got to be put to the voters in a more deliberative way. The rate of increase in their property taxes has been significantly less than ours.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there are distributional and equity concerns with the property tax, but you know, if we could reduce the property tax overall, that helps mitigate a lot of those concerns.
Thank you.
Right. Jim?
Yes, thank you. When you do meet with Mark, it seems to me that also a very important aspect of all of this that he needs to be focused on, and perhaps he is, but it I think it should be right up there at the top in terms of what he's considering, and that is, okay, you know, hopefully he can suggest a path forward that would address this in a significant way. But he also needs to be looking at how this is going to be achieved. For example, you know, I think CCM study is a good example of perhaps a study that had some very good intentions in the end, but it just politically didn't pass muster, so to speak. It didn't go anywhere because of disagreements of one sort or another. And I think no matter what, no matter how good or how well thought out the plan is that Mark Boughton comes up with, I believe there will be, you know, a storm of criticism, and there will be, and we have to anticipate that. We have to anticipate that you know how to deal with that, and have to lay the groundwork for that before the storm occurs. We need to be proactive if we're going to be successful, I think.
Right.
Well, I think I would agree. I think if it's possible, I know it's possible, we should offer up a menu of how do you pay for it, because it's going to cost. And there are a range of ways to do that. We don't necessarily have to make a recommendation as to which direction. That may, we may not get consensus, but it doesn't come, this reform does not come without a cost.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah, I think we've touched on both those points before, right? The politics of the politics of that change are fraught. Whatever that change is, no matter what you do, it'll be fraught. But then the question how to pay for it. I mean, what is the structural change? And if there is a structural change, yeah, what's the price tag and how do you pay for it? Right. I mean, so I think from the political standpoint, it's good to be talking about this now, because as we've also discussed in the past, that the, you know, if Lamont is reelected, or if there's a new governor in office, you know, in either case, this is a fresh start in January. And it's if we can come up with a dynamic set of recommendations and proposals for making that kind of seismic change, it'll help whoever takes office in January. And it's particularly timely because it can be, you know, this is the time when any governor has the most capital and political capital, that is. And, you know, so having it ready to go when mm-hmm. they take the oath, you know, I think is really going to be, you know, is where the value lies right now. Timing is everything.
Brendan, this is Francis. What I also suggest is you might want to look at a variety of different options, you know, small, medium, large, short, medium, long term. Obviously, yeah. I think that real solution is in some of a structural change, but we shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah.
And if we can get some modest reforms made, that's better than nothing.
You're right. Right. Okay. Well, and I did just want to also clarify that I don't think this is necessarily going to be the kind of thing that
you know, will be whispering in the commissioner's ear about how to go about doing this. I think his intention and mine certainly as well is, you know, that ACIR is going to be a critical participant in the discussion. We're going to be informing a proposal, and it will be essentially produced jointly. I think the governor, if it's Governor Lamont, I think Governor Lamont would have enough trust, has enough trust in ACIR as well as Commissioner Boughton, so that it's a credible. I think he is inclined. Presumably, he would be a welcome audience for this kind of proposal that would come from both of us. I don't think it's the kind of thing we should think of as, you know, we'll sort of make suggestions to Mark, but Mark is going to be the one who's going to deliver it and advocate for it. I think we're going to be an active participant in whatever the outcome is and whatever the proposal is. So those are all really helpful. I've jotted down every one of your suggestions going forward, you know, for that meeting. So thank you for that. And I'll have that, you know, I'll have those notes in hand when I sit with Mark next week. So thanks for that. Hopefully by the time of the next ACIR meeting, I'll have a little bit, I can report on the results of that. I did want to just briefly touch on item 4 on our agenda, which is the that report that was requested of us by University of Georgia for their review. I know Bruce put it on our agenda today. I'm trying to remember who was actually going to be helping to draft that. Was that Lyle or?
Sounds like it.
it was Lyle. I have to get back in touch with him. He and I were working out kind of an outline that we were putting some stuff in that we had already prepared, such as the ACIR history that I had written up whenever that was, a year ago, I don't know. And the idea being, if there's an outline with some meat on the bones, but some empty spaces, that individual members might see a place where they want to take it on and insert their own, you know, something relevant to their interests and so on. I don't believe there is a 100% commitment or obligation on the ACIR to proceed with it. I think it's an opportunity for the group, should the group choose to take that opportunity.
Right. Okay. You know, I think it's a valuable thing. I'm not as familiar with the learned journals of the planning community as many of you are. So I don't know the degree to which this journal is widely circulated or read, but you know, as long as it's not diverting a lot of our own resources away from the tasks that we have at hand. You know, I think it's a great opportunity for, you know, if it's something that folks see as having some value. So, but Bruce, it sounds like you can get back to us a little bit on, after you talk to Lyle, about where we are with that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, you know, it's always nice, publish or perish business, if we really think it's good, to get it out there. Never mind we spend too much time talking about it ourselves, you know.
Just right. Okay, good. Yeah, I'm open for that. Any other thoughts or suggestions on any of the topics today for this subcommittee? If not, the next full meeting will be the Friday after Labor Day, so September 9th, and then our next subcommittee meeting will be the 26th of September. And hopefully we'll be at least on our way towards a lot of these topics that we talked about today. So I realize summertime is still upon us. So we'll start revving up after Labor Day, I'm sure.
Brandon, one quick thought.
Sure.
And that is just in thinking about it, as it relates to the property tax effort, and your statement about how it's going to be hopefully very helpful to have ACIR involved in helping to steer this forward. I have to go back and think about over the years that ACIR has made recommendations, and sometimes after long consideration and lengthy reports, very few, if any, of the suggestions or reports were ever enacted into legislation or whatever really followed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So just to keep that in mind, I don't want this to end up being a futile, you know, effort where we end up kind of similarly to where perhaps CCM is at this point. So we have to keep in mind how difficult this is going to be and stay focused on, you know, it would be helpful if somebody were making, perhaps Mark would be making a list of all of the criticisms and all of the roadblocks that are going to be forthcoming. You can probably get part of the list from CCM, but there'll be plenty of objections out there from local leaders and legislative leaders, all kinds of public interest groups, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. So sure. So yep.
It would be helpful if someone recognizes those all up front and kind of pre-plans what the answer is going to be to each of those groups.
Yeah, I hear you. On your first point, I hope that it's apparent now after however long I've been chairman that I don't have a lot of time or patience to put it bluntly. Being chairing and being involved in an organization that's kind of not producing relevant and important stuff, which is why I think when we've taken on these kinds of studies, some of these things are, kind of smaller and hopefully will be useful, but large or small, one of the things that I think is critically important is that we have a partner in everything that we do. So if it's a question about making a change to reporting requirements, for example, I'm starting with the assumption that the planning and development chairs are partners with this, because if it's just a report that we're going to do, I think you're right, Jim, it's going to sit there on a shelf because, what does it matter that ACIR did a nice study? If it's not bought into and embraced by people in authority who have the ability to implement recommendations that we make, then it can be a waste of time. And I think that's true with the property tax thing as well. I think we talked about this at the beginning. I'm not interested in doing another study on property tax reform. God knows we've got plenty of that. The only reason why I'm doing it is because Mark Boughton approached me and said, I want to go big. Or we started a conversation months ago where he said, I want to go big on this. I really want to. And he has a mandate from the governor to really talk seriously about this. And Mark and I started the conversation about how we could work together. And it's only because of that I'm willing to take this on. And I think your individual suggestions, though, about being prepared for the politics, being prepared for the push, being prepared for the pushback and the objections. I think that also leads to Francis's point about, you know, small, medium, large goals. You know, right. You're absolutely right. That has to be part of this discussion. So good reminders.
Yeah.
Anything else from anyone? If not, I guess we'll finish our meeting, and we've, you know, got some work to do between now and Labor Day. So, but let's stay in touch. And, as we go, we've each got some individual tasks to take on between now and then. And, by the time we regroup on September 9th, we should have some good stuff to report. So thank you all for your help and participation.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Vacation too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Enjoy Ashford.
Yeah. Thanks. That's lovely.